Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling something that's, well, everywhere, but maybe we don't always stop to think about. What exactly is a business?
Right. It feels obvious, maybe. A shop, a website, a big company name.
Exactly. But our sources show it's much deeper than that. It's really the engine of our whole economy, this, like, decision-making organism that shapes our daily lives constantly.
It really does.
So we're going to decode the basics today, how businesses actually work, give you a real shortcut to understanding that economic world buzzing around you.
And, you know, understanding this stuff isn't just for people wanting to start a business or for economists.
No, it's definitely not.
It's for anyone, really, who wants to get how value gets created, how jobs happen, how all these different parts of our world connect.
Yeah.
We'll uncover some, I think, surprising links today. It shows just how much thought goes into, well, pretty much everything we buy and use.
Okay, let's properly deep dive into this then. Our mission is to go beyond just the surface level. We want to explore the real nature of business. Mm-hmm. Not just what it is, but how it works, you know. From the basic definition right through to the internal parts that make it run.
The engines inside.
Yeah, the engines. And then we'll zoom out a bit, look at the different economic sectors businesses operate in.
And finally,
put the spotlight on entrepreneurship itself. That driving force. We'll cover the tough parts, the challenges, but also the exciting opportunities that come with creating something new.
Sounds like a plan. Where do we start?
Well, to really get it, we need to strip it right back. What's the simplest definition?
Yay.
Our sources say a business is basically a decision-making organization. It pulls together resources to make goods or provide services.
And that decision-making part is key, isn't it?
Hugely important. It's not just a side note. Every choice, what to spend, what to launch, who to hire, it's a strategic move, a calculated risk almost.
Exactly. Think of it like a living thing, always reacting and adapting based on those decisions. It's fundamentally a transformation process.
Transformation? How so?
Well, businesses take inputs, raw materials, ideas, effort, and through their internal processes, they turn them into outputs, things people want or need.
Okay.
And the crucial bit is adding value. They add value at every single step.
Ah, right. Like coffee beans.
Perfect example. Harvested, that's one stage. Processed, roasted, brewed, served. Value gets added all the way until it's that latte you might be holding right now.
Gotcha. And those inputs, the building blocks.
Yeah.
You call them factors of production.
That's the term, yeah. There are four main ones.
Okay, what are they?
First, land. And that's not just, you know, a patch of ground.
Right. It's more than that.
It's all the natural resources. Minerals for your phone, water, timber, the raw stuff from the earth.
Okay. Land. What's next?
Labor. Human effort. That's both physical work, like on an assembly line.
And mental work.
And the intellectual side, too. Yeah. Brainstorming, planning, designing, all human effort.
Makes sense. Third.
Third is capital. Now, people often think this is just money. Well, money is part of it, the financial resources, but capital also means the tools used by the business, the machinery, the computers, the equipment.
The things that help labor do its job, basically.
Yeah.
Leverage potential, you said.
Exactly. It amplifies what labor can achieve. It allows for scale.
Okay. Land, labor, capital, and the fourth.
The fourth is a bit special. Enterprise. This is the entrepreneurial spark.
The secret ingredient.
Kind of. It's the skill to bring the other three factors, land, labor, capital, together effectively. It's having the vision, taking the risk, making it all work.
So it's the human driving force, the coordination.
Precisely. It's about seeing an opportunity and orchestrating the resources to meet it. It's what makes a business adapt and survive.
Okay, so you've got your inputs.
Mm-hmm.
Land, labor, capital, enterprise. Then what happens?
Then comes the processes stage. This is where the transformation really happens.
Inside the business.
Inside the business, yeah. Combining those inputs, changing them, refining them, it involves all sorts of internal activities.
Like manufacturing.
Like manufacturing a product, yes. Or designing how a service gets delivered efficiently. It's the doing part, turning potential into actual stuff.
And what comes out the other end are the outputs.
Correct. The outputs. These fall into two main categories.
Which are?
Goods, tangible things you can touch, a car, a chair, food.
Physical products.
And services, intangible things.
Things you can't physically hold.
Right. Like banking services, getting advice from a consultant, healthcare, education. You experience them. They provide value, but you can't, you know, put them in your pocket.
Okay, that makes sense. Goods and services. So how do businesses actually manage all this? Getting the inputs, running the processes, delivering the outputs, day after day?
Well, they organize themselves. They create structure. That's where functional areas come in. Think of them like specialized departments within the business.
To make things more efficient?
Exactly. Allows people to focus and build expertise in specific areas. Most businesses, especially as they grow, divide things up this way.
Okay, so what are the main ones?
Let's break them down. First up, human resources, HR.
Right, HR. Dealing with people.
All about the people. But it's strategic now. It's workforce planning, making sure you have the right people with the right skills. It's recruitment, training, doing performance reviews.
Handling the tricky stuff too, like dismissals.
Yeah, managing dismissals or redundancies professionally. Ultimately, HR aims to create an environment where people are productive and ideally motivated.
Okay, HR. What else?
Then you've got finance and accounts. The money people.
Keeping track of the money.
Keeping track, yes, but much more. Recording every transaction accurately, making sure the business follows all the tax laws and legal requirements.
Compliance stuff.
Definitely. And providing really crucial financial information to everyone who needs it, managers, shareholders, potential investors, helping them make smart decisions about where the money goes.
Vital. Okay, who's next?
Marketing. This is the department that connects the business to its customers.
So advertising, commercials.
That's part of it, promotion. But marketing is broader. It's about first understanding the customer. What do they need? What do they want? Often involves a lot of market research.
Finding out what makes people tick.
Exactly. And then figuring out how to meet those needs better than the competition. And this is where it gets interesting. They use a framework.
Ah, the 7 P's.
You got it. The 7 P's of marketing. Most people know the basic four. Product, what you're selling. Price, how much it costs. Place, what customers get it. Promotion, how you tell people about it.
Right. The standard ones.
But especially for services, our sources really emphasize adding three more. People, the staff, interacting with customers are crucial.
Yeah, a bad interaction can ruin it.
Totally. Then, processes and systems that ensure a smooth, consistent service delivery every time. Think about ordering online. How easy or hard is it?
Okay. And the last P.
Physical evidence. The tangible clues about the service quality. Is the website easy to use? Is the shop clean? Is the report well presented? Little things that build confidence.
That's quite a lot to manage just within marketing.
Yeah.
Do businesses sometimes drop the ball on some of those P's? Maybe the newer ones?
Oh, definitely. It's often people and processes that get less attention, particularly if a company started out just making a physical product and then added services.
Right.
But the real power of the 7 P's is seeing how they're interconnected. Change your price. And you might need to rethink your promotion, maybe even adjust the product features or the kind of people you need delivering it.
It's a balancing act.
It's a delicate dance, exactly. Get it right, and it's a huge competitive advantage.
Okay, so HR, finance, marketing. What's the last main one?
Operations management. Or just operations.
Doers.
You could say that. They're the ones who manage the actual production process, converting the raw materials into the finished goods.
Or delivering the service.
Or designing and running the systems that deliver the service efficiently. They're focused on quality, cost effectiveness, making sure things actually get made or done properly.
So here's where it gets really interesting, as you said. These areas can't just work in isolation, can they?
Absolutely not. That's the key. They have to collaborate constantly.
Like marketing promising something that operations can't actually deliver?
Classic problem. Leads to unhappy customers fast. Or finance cutting budgets in a way that hampers HR's ability to hire needed staff. They need to function as one unit.
A unified organism, like you said earlier.
Precisely. That seamless integration between departments is often what separates a good business from a great one.
Okay, so that's the inside view. What about looking outwards? How do businesses fit into the bigger economic picture?
Right. The economy isn't just one big blob. It's usually divided into different sectors based on the main type of activity. Helps us understand the flow.
Kind of like layers.
Yeah, layers is a good way to think about it. There are generally four main sectors we talk about.
Okay, let's go through them. What's the first layer?
The primary sector. This is all about taking things directly from nature, extraction, and harvesting.
So farming, fishing.
Exactly. Farming, fishing, mining for minerals, drilling for oil, getting the raw material.
Got it. Primary sector, then.
Then comes the secondary sector. This right. is manufacturing and construction.
Taking the raw stuff and making something.
Precisely. Transforming those raw materials from the primary sector into finished or semi-finished goods. Car factories, house builders, textile mills. That's all secondary sector.
Okay. Primary, secondary. What's next?
The tertiary sector. This one is huge in most developed economies. It's all about providing services.
Services like we talked about before, banking, healthcare.
Yes. Transport, banking, retail stores, insurance, restaurants, hotels, hairdressers. The list goes on and on. Providing services to people and other businesses.
Makes sense. Is there a fourth?
There is, and it reflects how modern economies have evolved. It's the quaternary sector.
Quaternary, what's that?
This is the knowledge-based sector. It's focused on intellectual activities and information.
Like tech companies.
Tech companies, yes. ICT, scientific research and development, R&D, consultancy services, education, media. It's where information and ideas are the main product.
So it's about brain power, essentially.
Very much so. Driving innovation across all the other sectors.
Now, you mentioned flow earlier. These sectors don't exist in bubbles, right? They connect.
Exactly. They're linked in what's called the chain of production.
Chain of production.
Yeah. Think of how something gets to you, the final consumer. It often starts with extraction in the primary sector.
Like mining metal ore.
Right. Then it goes to manufacturing in the secondary sector to be turned into, say, components for a phone.
Okay.
Then maybe the tertiary sector gets involved with distribution, retail, selling you the phone, providing the phone service.
Maybe the quaternary sector did the R&D for the phone's technology.
Perfect. See how it flows. Primary, secondary, tertiary, quaternary, often feeding in a quaternary consumer. And crucially, value is added at each link in that chain.
Making the final product worth more than the sum of its initial raw parts.
That's the essence of it. What's fascinating here is how seamlessly these sectors often flow into one another.
Okay, that gives us the big picture. Let's zoom back in now to the people who actually start these businesses, the entrepreneurs.
Ah, yes, the catalysts.
How do our sources define an entrepreneur?
Generally, it's someone who spots an opportunity, comes up with a business idea, and then plans, organizes, and manages that business. And importantly, they take on the financial risks involved.
Right. The risk part is key. What makes someone like that tick? What are the characteristics?
Well, there are several common traits. They usually have a strong vision. They can see what they want to achieve. They need a willingness to take calculated risks.
Not just reckless gambling.
No, calculated risks. They need good decision-making and leadership skills to guide the venture. They take responsibility for the business, for their employees.
And what drives them? What's the motivation?
It varies, but often it's a mix. The potential for profit, sure, but also a strong desire for independence, being their own boss. And often a passion for innovation, for creating something new or doing something better.
So, if they succeed, what are the upsides? The rewards?
The rewards of entrepreneurship can be significant. Obviously, financial profit is a big one.
Making money.
Right. But also recognition, building a respected brand or company. There's the control and independence we mentioned, setting your own direction.
Being in charge.
And potentially capital growth, the business itself becoming more valuable over time, building real wealth.
Okay, those sound pretty good, but it can't be all smooth sailing. What about the downsides, the risks?
Absolutely crucial to acknowledge the risks of entrepreneurship. The flip side of potential profit is the very real risk of financial loss, even ending up in debt.
Losing your investment or more.
Exactly. There's often immense stress and personal sacrifice, long hours, pressure, impact on family life.
Yeah, you hear about that a lot.
And of course, there's always the risk of failure. The business might just not work out due to competition, market changes, or internal problems.
Which brings up that question. Why do it? Knowing those risks.
That's the fascinating part, isn't it? It's not just about chasing riches. For many, it's that deep need for autonomy or the drive to solve a specific problem they see in the world. Or just the sheer challenge of building something from nothing.
So building something from nothing, our sources must talk about the specific hurdles, right? The actual challenges people face when starting up.
Oh, yes. The list is pretty long and quite daunting.
Let's hear some.
A major one is often lack of finance or capital right at the start. Just getting the money to get going.
The startup funds.
Exactly. Then, even if you get started, managing cash flow can be a killer. Having enough money coming in when you need it to pay bills and suppliers.
Timing is everything.
It really is. Other challenges include high production costs, maybe finding a poor location that doesn't attract customers, struggling with marketing to get noticed.
Building a customer base.
Yeah, having an unstable customer base, facing difficulties with people management as you hire staff, navigating all the legal requirements.
Red tape.
Loads of it.
Wow.
And then there are external influences you can't control, economic downturns, new competitors popping up, changes in regulations. It's tough out there.
Wow. Okay. That is a minefield. So Given all that, why does anyone bother? What are the opportunities that pull people in?
Well, despite the challenges, the opportunities for starting a business are powerful motivators. Our sources actually use a handy mnemonic for this: get cash.
Get cash, like literally.
Huh? Not quite literally get cash, but it helps remember the key opportunities. Let me break it down naturally first. A big pull is the potential for growth.
The business getting bigger and more valuable.
Exactly. Capital appreciation. Seeing your idea grow into something substantial. That's the G.
Okay, G for growth.
Then E is for earnings. The chance to earn significantly more than you might in a standard job, directly linked to your success.
Higher income potential.
Right. T stands for transference and inheritance. This is unique. Building an asset you can actually pass on to your family, your kids, creating a legacy.
Right. Something lasting. GET.
Next, C is for challenge. For many entrepreneurs, the sheer challenge of overcoming problems, taking risks, and succeeding is a reward in itself.
The satisfaction of figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. A is for autonomy. That independence we talked about. Making your own decisions. Controlling your own work life.
Being your own boss.
The core appeal for many. S is for security. Now, this might seem counterintuitive given the risk.
How is it security?
It's about having more control over your own financial future and retirement rather than being solely dependent on an employer who could make you redundant, building your own safety net in a way.
Okay, I see the logic. GETCAS. What's H?
H is for hobbies. The amazing opportunity to turn something you're genuinely passionate about, your interest or hobby, into your actual job, into a profitable business.
Doing what you love. That's the GIT cash framework then. Growth, earnings, mm-hmm. transference, challenge, autonomy, security, hobbies.
That's it. A good summary of the key pulls.
So what does this all mean when we put it together? It really highlights that starting and running a business is this constant tightrope walk, isn't it? Balancing that huge risk against potentially massive rewards.
It absolutely is. It takes that specific blend of vision, courage, resilience, and maybe just a bit of craziness to bridge that gap between seeing a need and building a solution.
A dynamic dance, as you said before.
Definitely. So wrapping things up, businesses are just fundamentally vital. They're the engines creating the goods, the services, the jobs, the wealth in our economy.
Yeah, they really underpin so much.
They operate across all those sectors we discussed, primary, secondary, tertiary, quaternary, and their success really hinges on managing those internal functions, HR, finance, marketing, operations, effectively and cohesively.
And for you listening, getting a handle on these basics, what a business is, how the chain of production works, what drives entrepreneurs, it really gives you a powerful lens for understanding the world.
It demystifies a lot of what's going on around us every day, how value is created, how the economy functions.
Definitely. So here's a final thought for you to maybe chew on after this deep dive. Given everything we've talked about, the challenges, the opportunities, the sectors, think about your own daily life. Is there some annoying problem, some unmet need, something that just doesn't work quite right for you? Could that little frustration, that gap, actually be the seed of a new business idea? And if it could, where might it fit? Which sector, primary, secondary, tertiary, or that knowledge-based quaternary sector, would that potential solution fall into? Something to mull over.